So we'll stop there on the subject of contraception. We have a few minutes for Q&A. Yes, dear. The question for this thing,
for Father Joseph's thing,
is: are some contraceptives? I mentioned that some contraceptives, like the intrauterine device, the IUD, are in fact abortifacient, because the IUD rests on the inside of the uterine wall and prevents the fertilized egg from planting on the uterine wall, and causes an abortion. And the question is: aren't some forms of the pill, of oral contraceptive, also abortifacient? And the answer is absolutely, which is one of the reasons no Orthodox Christian ever should use oral contraceptives. That doesn't mean every oral contraceptive is. It depends on the dose and it depends on the woman's body with regards to the amount of estrogen in her system, etc. But we have medical studies, scientific studies, that show in some cases that the pill does work in an abortifacient way. And therefore, if you're an Orthodox Christian, would you ever do something that some of the time is going to kill somebody? Well, yeah, I throw darts at my local pub, but every Tuesday, you know, there's a chance I'm going to throw, you know, there's people walk in front of that, but I just keep throwing. Because, you know, it doesn't happen every time, so I should just do it. I mean, if it has the possibility of making you a murderer, you don't do it. You don't do it. I've been asking our bishops to speak about that. You know, if they're too scared, some of them, to say too much, you know, and they'd rather have me go out there and kind of get the darts thrown at me, I'm okay with that. But the pill is such a big deal with our people, and so many Orthodox Christians are on it, and so few know that it has the possibility of being abortifacient. I just think it's going to cause a lot of tears, but it's going to save a lot of women's souls. They're going to say, oh goodness, forget that. Forget that. Does everyone hear the question? If you've come into the church and had an actual contraceptive surgery, like your fallopian tubes tied or a vasectomy, since there is the possibility of reversing those things, should you have them reversed when you come into the church? My answer to that would be, if you're of childbearing age, yes, absolutely. And not just that, you should find out how much you paid for both surgeries and give that much more to the poor in penance. So yes, get it reversed and then make atonement for your squandering of thousands of dollars that didn't belong to you to do that with. Now, of course, that's just in a general statement. Every person's particular. So that person should go to their spiritual father and tell them and ask them. And I've had this case in my parish, and I've had successful fruits. I mean, people have got them fixed, you know. Thank God. Got them fixed.
What's childbearing?
When the woman's still ovulating. I mean, God's not an idiot, right? He knows when a woman should go through menopause and when she shouldn't. If you say it's not that, then what is your standard? When you decide, you know. Yeah. Oh no, I'm just throwing it right back at you. See, it's a good question. But childbearing age is as long as a woman can have a baby. And if you don't want to, if you're too old, you know, you think you're going to die, you know, embrace natural family planning. God will help you. Plus, you should be older, and it should be easier for you. I didn't say easy. I didn't say easy. I just said easier, right? Easier. And you know, if it's too hard, you know, one of the real difficulties is it's hard to move anywhere in society without constant titillation and temptation. Where I live, we have huge, big billboards of pornography on the freeways, naked women everywhere. You cannot drive without getting slimed. So how does a man who's embracing chastity, I mean, how does he really make it? I think he moves to Clay Ellum or something. You know, you make hard decisions to put yourself in a surrounding that's more peaceful. That's more peaceful. Other questions? Yeah. Frederick.
What's the reason why values of the West penetrate the most contraception? And is there any connection between, especially in Europe, European governments promoting that, as well as, since I guess the 60s, this promotion of Islamic immigration? Is there any mentality behind that that people like Bagdor and Leon Gulachi have written about, that whole connection? Is there any connection? Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, there's a couple questions there. One of the questions was, why does the West, and specifically Western governments, states, seem so invested in the propagation of contraception? And another was, what's the connection between that and Islamic immigration to the West, especially in the writing of some contemporary scholars like Bat-Yor, who are commenting upon, in a very frightful way, on the intentional occupation of the West by Muslims. You want to add to those two questions? Yeah, so once again, it comes down to money. I think money is at the heart of individual families' decision and at larger state-level decisions. And, of course, there's a consequence to that because it's often not thought through. It's the immediate we're trying to avoid. We're not thinking about the crisis that we're going to have as we've caused our entire culture to age. And we have less and less proportion of young people who are working. And we have to bring foreigners to this who also coughed an arm and a leg. That's the legal ones. The illegal ones even cost more. I mean, you want to talk about money. You talk about California's.
And the birth rate is four times higher, and they don't realize this is cultural suicide, that the government's mad. That's why I asked the question.
You know, I can't imagine that they don't think about this, because there are so many books on this subject. For the last 10 years, we've, you know, text after text about the demographic decline of the West have been in publication. So certainly, I mean, all these think tanks and these major political leaders are thinking about that. I think it's part of a vision, an essential secular vision of life. And they're not saying you can't have children. They're not Chinese. They're saying, you know, be reasonable, you know, have those that you can afford and maintain your lifestyle, which, you know, is about two kids, usually on the average. And we want to make sure that couples have the opportunity to know how they can have only two kids. And therefore, if you have more, it's pretty much assumed you don't know what you're doing, which is why the cashier would say to me, in my casting, don't you know about birth control? As though, you know, I'm some flub who's never heard of birth control. Who in the world could possibly be raised in America and not know everything about birth control? As my friend said, right, they come to college and they're experts. They don't know how to read and write. They can tell you everything about birth control. Exactly. Except occasional, you know, condoms if they're distributed at school. You know, the Muslims do not have a serious perspective on abortion and contraception as we do. But you would never know that because they have a more serious perspective on family, community, and clan life than Western secular Westerners like we do have. So their large family is being preserved more by the fact that they have a traditional view of the family in which the man is in the marketplace and the woman, part of her identity, central to her identity, is being a mother. And that cultural concept is keeping them producing large numbers of children. But they are not as serious about contraception and abortion as we are.
Is the practice of sexual abstinence by the couple as a means to regulate somehow the frequency of births,
yeah,
acceptable in any way?
You ever hear the question? The question is natural family planning, the voluntary embrace of chastity for a time during fertile seasons of a couple, acceptable in any way? I would say that that's up to the spiritual father and the couple. On the surface, it has nothing that's necessarily sinful about it. And in fact, many of the saints voluntarily did that. They embraced that. They didn't do it primarily because they didn't want children. They did it primarily because they wanted heaven. And that's a big difference, I think, between those two. But there are, I think there are certainly times, and in my opinion, that's a great step for a couple that's trying to get off artificial contraception. A couple that's been used, that's used to doing that, they're Orthodox and they're trying to bring their life into accord with the church's teaching. I think that's a very good step for them. And it's much more, you know, a lot of people have this view that it's not very successful. That, you know, what do you call people who use natural family planning? Parents? You know, that joke is not as valid today because, in fact, the traditional method of natural family planning for the last 150 years is to use a chart and to use a temperature gauge. And you measure the woman's temperature, you note differences in her temperature that are linked to ovulation and to the presence of certain hormones at ovulation, and you chart it, and eventually over a period of months, you have a chart showing these are the days when the woman's not ovulating, etc. Not done that way anymore. Today we actually have scientific fertility monitors where a woman can actually put a little bit of her urine in the morning on a stick, just like a pregnancy test, stick it into a fertility monitor, and it will tell you exactly where she is in her ovulatory cycle. Is she 3 days before ovulation? Is she 1 day before ovulation? Is she ovulating? Is she not? So the possibility of gauging that is much higher. But, you know, once again, the good thing about that is that it's a blessed asceticism. For the couple to do that, you know, it takes a mutual agreement to be reasonable with your passions and to fight against them on the days when your wife is, you know, one is fertile, and if you're blessed to not seek a child at that time, you're going to have to pray and struggle and fast and make your matanias and ask God's help, and He's going to bless you. He's going to strengthen you, just like you do when you fast. You know, your stomach yells up at you, and you look down at it, and you say, "Shh, go back to sleep." You know, and if it does it a lot of times, you keep telling it, and you can do the same to the sexual impulse. Maybe it's not as easy to do, but you reorient yourself, and you put your soul back into the chariot of the passions to rule it by reason. Yes, dear?
I'm going to preface this by saying, forgive me, because you know I love you, before I ask this question.
No problem.
You had stated quite a bit about contraception, and this is sort of related, the state of involuntary barrenness. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that it was cursed, and you didn't say exactly barrenness being cursed. But as someone who's had extensive experience with involuntary barrenness, I just wanted you to clarify what the thought.
Great question. It's a great question. I think the question was, if I would comment upon involuntary barrenness. And is it cursed? In fact, that's not all what the fathers say, no. And what I pointed out earlier is that a barren church has become the most fruitful in the universe, and an unwed virgin has become the mother of God. And we're celebrating today the birth of the most pure Theotokos from barren and sterile parents. And their birth, in fact, has saved us, has been more fruitful than others. What I would simply say is that in that case, in order that for that to be a Christian barrenness, because that's what it should be oriented to heaven. And those who have lives like that, like I think we can safely assume about the lives of Saints Priscilla and Aquila, that they can, in fact, dedicate their lives to the work of the church in a way that is greater than families with a lot of kids. And that's what should be done. So husbands and wives who are discerning it's not God's will for them to have children should still pray for that, I think. They should still pray for that and wish for that. And don't doubt, you never know when that's going to happen. You never know when that's going to happen. And when, at the least, expect, I mean, believe me, Joachim and Anna did not expect that. They did not expect that. But you should discern and find out what your calling is then. Why has God given you this unique calling? And probably there's a lot of work to do for the kingdom that you couldn't do with kids. We should be busy about it, I think. And then you can be very fruitful. Any other questions that we have?
We might have some questions tonight. The Father Mahone rest for 15 minutes before we start vestries.
You know, tonight the subject is on how to find a spouse, and I hope a decent number of young people who aren't married yet will come. But just an encouragement to you who are already married, you may think that this is, what does this have to do with me? It's irrelevant. But you certainly live and work and play with a lot of unmarried people. Perhaps there's something in it for you too that you can pass on to those who are trying to find a spouse. It may be relevant yet to your life.
So if you have a question, maybe you could